listening to CPR, communitypublicradio.org. And this is Weekday World. I'm your host, Don DeBar. With a report of some of the news and events of the past 24 hours from the CPR newsroom. From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today we get a proximate look at some of the things going on in and around Washington, D.C. with Garland Nixon, who's a journalist in the Washington, D.C. and Baltimore area. We discussed two topics that are very hot right now in Washington, that being first, the meaning, if any, of the election this past Tuesday, and the other being the disclosures of a rigged primary by none other than Donna Brazile. Garland, by the way, is a member of the board of the ACLU, the national board of the ACLU. He's a journalist. He has a live stream that he does on Facebook, and what other venues? I've seen you on Fox, for example.
Yeah, I've done a number of things. So for years now, I've been doing fairly regularly, some months more than others, but appearances on Fox, Fox News, Fox Business News, Fox Online. I do a radio show on Pacifica, a radio show on Sputnik News here in D.C. So I'm all over. I do podcasts. I mean, you might find me anywhere on the media on a given day.
Yeah, right. And I found you at the conventions, as a matter of fact. That's where we met.
Yes, yeah, that was I was covering the convention for Pacifica. I had a wonderful time doing that, not just for PFW but for the whole network. And that was trust me, that was a major learning experience for me, the DNC convention.
Sure. Oh yeah, for sure. So let's talk about some of the hot stuff in DC right now. We've got, first of all, the election. You had the gubernatorial elections in both New Jersey and Virginia that some people are holding out as being some bellwether of Trump's popularity. Not many people mention the fact that you had a Democratic governor in Virginia. You still have, actually, until the next one is sworn in. Terry McAuliffe, who is the former head of the DNC. And in New Jersey, that it's been a 2 or 3 year public relations disaster for the governor, Chris Christie, over Bridgegate. And the person that ran is his lieutenant governor, and so she's been identified with that, and that was a pretty close race anyway.
Yeah, there's a couple of things you could discuss there. Not the least of which being this. In Virginia, if you talk about Virginia, I covered that race, and I met with very frequently with the person who was running the Get Out the Vote program for the Democrats. What I was told by her was that what that was a referendum on in Virginia was Charlottesville, that the Charlottesville issue scared the bejesus out of a lot of people of color, that there was a huge backlash against the GOP, who was seen as supporting the Confederacy, basically embracing the Confederacy, particularly, the GOP candidate, who had made statements in the past, but specifically about embracing the Confederacy.
Yeah.
So that was an easy one. So, there were local factors involved there regarding him. And, if you look at the midterm elections, and this can be considered somewhat of a midterm election, oftentimes midterm elections are older and whiter. That's the way they put them. Less people of color, less young people. But because of the Charlottesville issue, it turned out a lot of people of color. They had somewhere around 10% higher turnout than last time. And so I think that's what turned the tables on the GOP in Virginia. The other part of the thing to keep in mind is this. When you start talking about your local elections, your statewide elections, they're totally different dynamics. If you talk about federal elections now, the two big issues that you think about are number one would be, your Wall Street elitist kind of economic policies. And number two, foreign policy, the, hawkish neocon form of foreign policy. Right. And those are the two policies that were the most upsetting to the Democratic base that tend to, kind of back away from the Democratic leadership. Well, right, when you talk about your local politics, in Virginia, New Jersey, those issues didn't come up.
Right. Yeah. We're talking in the national elections, neoliberal economics and neocon foreign policy. New Jersey, not to my knowledge, doesn't have its own foreign policy, nor does it have its own economic policy, really, other than the one that they all commonly have, because the last 82 billion governors in New Jersey have come out of Goldman Sachs or whatever. So to the extent they have an economic policy, there's some continuity there across administrations.
And let's not forget, additionally, what happened. Well, in New Jersey, we're also talking about both Virginia and New Jersey that have become, New Jersey for quite a while, but Virginia, as of recently, they're solidly blue states. So the fact of the matter is, the Democrats should hold, especially in an off, in a midterm election year or close to a midterm election year, the Democratic Party should definitely serve in the solidly blue states. Additionally, as you said, in New Jersey, you're looking at a couple of factors, not the least of which being Chris Christie was one of the most unpopular governors in the nation. And add this, even though the guy who ran was a Goldman Sachs guy, he ran to the left. He ran hard to the left. He ran legalization of marijuana. He ran $15 minimum wage. So even that, I think there are a lot of progressives that are looking for. What they're looking for is for the Democratic Party to run towards them, not away from them. If you look at the general election in 2016 with Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine, they ran away from their base. They wouldn't embrace the $15 minimum wage. Right. They wouldn't embrace marijuana legalization. They wouldn't embrace anything the progressives wanted.
Right.
So at least this guy ran towards the base. And people like me have always argued the way you win is running towards the base. Give people what they want, and they'll come to the polls.
That's right.
And I think that demonstrated that in New Jersey.
After the election, as a matter of fact, when he was both his acceptance speech and then the media appearances that he did, he kept hammering on the $15 minimum wage. So it appears that whatever else he does, they intend to go there. And that is something that people have been organizing for a very long time.
Right. It's a matter of, to when you run towards your base, people will over. Exactly. The bottom line is, I always put it like this in politics. Everybody in America is listening to the same radio station, WIIFM. What's in it for me? And if you want progressives to come to the polls, you have to tell them what's in it for them. And he said, this is what's in it for you. And they said, okay, we'll come vote for you.
That's
now, the fact of the matter is, he could turn and stab them in the back. But at least they have a chance to get what they want by having someone that'll at least mouth the words. Now they'll see, now that they put him in office, they'll get to see whether or not he's going to stand for what he said he was standing for. But I think a lot of people like me have argued that people will come to the polls. They will show up. But you got to tell them, you have to tell them, you know, this is what I'm going to give you. And it has to be populist policies that are attractive to the working class and the working poor and the poor and to millennials. Because he also talked about having the need to do something to address extremely high cost of college.
So that's New Jersey. In Virginia, you mentioned that you had, first of all, a reaction, a response, a backlash against the Charlottesville thing and the, you know, rhetorical embrace of white supremacy that was made by a number of Republicans. Was there any similar movement by the Democratic candidates towards a progressive agenda, or did they feel that just riding the, you know, the back of that particular reaction was sufficient so they didn't have to go there?
Well, unfortunately, you didn't get a progressive move from Ralph Northam, who was the Democratic president. I mean, the Democratic nominee who won by 9 points. You didn't. He actually, you know, unfortunately went in the wrong direction. He said some things that were very unpleasant to progressives, such as that he would sign a bill that would ban sanctuary cities. And he made other statements about, you know, about a Confederate monument that he thought the town should decide. But what he did, what happened here, too, the dynamic, too, there is a little different. Because, you know, when I was growing up, I used to hear this in the black community, and that they said, basically, I'd heard people say, black people either vote for the Democrat or against the Republican. And,
right.
And now that is changing with the millennials. The black millennials, they ain't playing that game no more. They'll stay home first, right?
Right. That's what happened.
But with the older people, I think what you had in Virginia was people who voted against the Republican. They didn't vote for Ralph Northam. He could have beat him worse if he'd have ran, you know, more to the left. But he didn't. He won. I put it like this. He didn't win. Gillespie lost. I don't think a Republican was going to win. Now you look at the numbers. I don't think a Republican was going to win there. You probably could have ran a bag of French fries and beat a Republican because of the response.
Right.
To you know, you're talking about a southern state,
right,
where people have a very, very significant and horrifying memory of what happened during the civil rights movement and before.
Well, the
and
capital.
When you see a bunch of Klansmen marching around, buddy, they ain't going to. They're not going to be happy.
Yeah, I mean, the capital of the Confederacy, Richmond, was in Virginia. So, you know, it's there's a battle that's been going on there since the beginning of the U.S. Another question I have on that, you know, one of the things is, again, this is some kind of referendum on Trump and or Bannon. The reference to Bannon being due to the fact that he is putting together, you know, rumored to be and says he is putting together a insurgency campaign, particularly for Republican senators that are up for re-election next year. You have a third of the Senate up every 2 years. Next year, out of that, I think there's a total of 33. You have 8 Republicans, and the balance are Democrats, with the exception of 2 independents, being Sanders and the senator from Maine. You know, Bannon so far has... you know, I've been celebrating because the interim elections for senator, the primaries, he's won them and won them pretty big against most predictions. His presence really wasn't noted in this gubernatorial election, and he wrote a kind of scathing piece at the end about the Republican candidate, saying you can't phone in your campaign, basically. Trump also was not very visible in this, and so I'm wondering if he can really look at this as some sort of a measurement of their, you know, what's going to happen next year.
I don't think so. You know, when you look at Bannon, you know, one of the things that he takes credit for is Roy Moore winning. Well, Roy Moore was up by 8 to 10 points before Bannon even came to before Bannon or Trump or anyone else came to town. And he won by, what, 8 or 10 points, something like that.
Yeah.
So the bottom line is, you know, Casey Stengel used to say, the art of being a genius is taking credit for all the home runs somebody else hit. Bannon came to Alabama. He saw Roy Moore was going to win. And he said, hey, I'm behind Roy Moore. Roy Moore won. And then Bannon said, hey, I made him win. No, he didn't make him win. Moore had that. You know, that was that's an easy game to play.
Right.
What Bannon represents is he does represent some real problems, and so does Roy Moore, that the Republican Party has. And that's that they've got a, you know, their nutcase far right wing, you know, element that they have to deal with. And that's a huge, that is a large element in their party that they have to deal with. I bet you 25-30% or more of their party supports those kind of people, at least 25. But Bannon isn't, I mean, you know, he's going to cause them problems, but I don't see him causing a problem for you know, anyone else. He's going to take a lot of credit for things that would have happened with or without him. But, you know, he's not by any, what we've seen is this. He's no tactician or strategist. I mean, just last night, I believe, or the night before, he was on Hannity saying Mitch McConnell should resign. That, you know, in order to make everything better, Mitch McConnell should resign. Well, what kind of strategy is that? I mean, you know what I mean? For him to do that, of what benefit? What does he get out of it? So, you know, Bannon is he's a fire breather. He's a flamethrower. But ultimately, I think he's a political suicide bomber where, you know, he's going to take the party out and, you know, with crazy candidates and you know, I don't think he's as, I don't think he's a positive factor for their party in that he ain't going to help them. In fact, in recent days, he actually volunteered to come to Virginia and do a rally for the guy Ed Gillespie, and Gillespie was like, "No, thank you. That's all I need.
Wow.
You know, is you coming up here with more white supremacists and scaring the black folks to the polls."
Mm. Let's shift gears a little bit. The whole Donna Brazil thing. What's the fallout like in the D.C. area? I mean, you're looking at it up
so
close.
So here's what you have. It's pretty pathetic, really, to me. It's a sad state of affairs because what you're looking at is Donna Brazil. And I have to be honest and open here. I know Donna Brazil. I've been in her home. You know, I've talked with her before, and you know, and I like Donna Brazil. I was very angry at her for what she did when as far as giving Hillary Clinton, you know, slipping her the test questions. But if you ever met her and sat around and talked to her, you'd like her because she's a very nice person, right? Mm. And so that, to be honest, I wasn't shocked either when she came out and just said, "Look, here's the deal." Because of all the people up in that circle, the ones that I've been around and know, I don't have a lot of respect for them. But she's one that I do have a lot of respect for, so I wasn't shocked. Now, a lot of people will say, well, she's just writing a book, you know, and they will, you know, they will certainly say, well, she's up to no good, and I don't, you know, think much of her still. And I understand that, because there are a lot of people that are mad at her. But if you look at what she did, A, it was pretty courageous, because I mean, she's on the outside looking in now. All the people that were around her, she was on the inside. She's some of the things that she said were, I mean, absolutely damning.
Yeah, for sure. Yep. Not for nothing. Some of the other people that have come out and you know, shown some of the backroom dealings around the Clintons have, you know, like Ron Brown and others have met some ugly finales. So well, it does take a little courage.
Sometimes, you know, one of the safest things that you can do in this world is be on, you know, let out everything you know.
Yeah, right.
Because
that's
think
right.
About this. If it's the mafia and you know something, and you haven't told, make
right.
sure you don't tell.
Right, that's right. But if you
but
tell
once
it all,
you get it out there, yeah. it gets a little too obvious.
Yep, that's right.
You know, so, but yep. And the fact of the matter is, what I think is telling, what is really telling, is the reaction. You know, they've been blasting her. Now, what's interesting is, they've been blasting her in non-substantive ways.
Right.
Like, well, you know, Tom Perez saying, well, you know, the word rigged is a little... is a loaded word. Well, we're not talking about semantics here.
Right.
That's like me robbing a bank and somebody saying, you robbed the bank. Well, the word robbed is a loaded word.
Right.
How about we just say that I, you know, made an unscheduled withdrawal. It doesn't matter whether you call it a bank robbery.
You took the money. So you can net it out, right?
Yeah, they're playing these semantics games, right. Everything in the world, because that's who they are. They're never going to say they're sorry. They're never going to say we did wrong, because that's who they are. These people are corrupt to the core. They don't care, and they're living a fat, happy life. They're getting money. If you look at one of the things that she said, one of the things she said was, normally it costs about $2 million a month, but under Debbie Wasserman Schultz for the last 5 years, it's been $4 million a month. She had one of Barack Obama's consultants for $180,000 a year. She had Hillary Rosen. Hillary Rosen is like the biggest Clinton apologist in the world. She's always running around. Clinton's wonderful. Well, we thought, okay, she's just a Clinton. Love it. Well, we find that she runs this political consultant company. She was on payroll for $25,000 a month.
Right.
So we see that these Clinton hangers on, some of them that we just thought, oh, they're just Clinton lovers. Well, no, that wasn't it.
Right.
They're getting, they're lining their pockets.
Right. They're getting paid. Well, you know, the same thing that we saw with the so-called hack of the DNC, and that we've seen from a number of other leaks from, you know, a whole bunch of leakers, rather than addressing the substance of the disclosure, what they do is attack the, you know, either impute a motive or attack the motive of the person that leaked it. And so there's no discussion of the behavior that is being exposed, but rather of the person exposing it.
Right, right. Because they do pretty much, you know, they play the hand they're dealt. The bottom line is, you know what they say in court, you know, if the facts are against you, what is it? If the evidence is against you, argue the facts. If the facts are against you, argue the evidence.
Right,
if the evidence and the facts are against you, scream and beat on the table.
Right, that's it.
That's what they're doing. They're screaming to be. What are they going to do when they are absolutely outed? They are lying. Robbie Mook is out there saying, "Oh no, it wasn't rigged."
Right.
That, you know,
right.
No, it wasn't rigged.
Right.
So now that all the evidence is out, you said that's the easiest one, and that is just flat out denial.
Yeah.
There's a great book by Patricia Evans called The Verbally Abusive Relationship, and they talk about things that abusive people do, and one of the things they say is denial, where it's like somebody hits you in the head, and you say, "Ow, why'd you hit me in the head?" And they say, "I didn't hit you."
Right.
You know, they curse at you and call you your name, and you say, "Hey, why'd you call me that name?" And they say, "I didn't call you a name."
Right.
Just flat out denial, it didn't happen, and that's part of what they're doing. Part of it is they don't care, and they feel like, what difference does it make? We make the rules. And we make the rules committee. The other part of it is, what other option do they have to simply come out and say, we did it? Let me give you a perfect example, I think. If you look at WikiLeaks, right, when it comes to the WikiLeaks emails, here's what they say. Ignore the content of the emails. You should be concerned about where they came from. Well, where they allege they came from, right?
They
allege they came from the Russians, and they say, ignore the content.
Right.
You should be concerned about where these emails came from, who was behind them, right?
Right.
Now, when we find out that the Clinton team financed the Steele dossier, right? When we find out that the Clinton team paid for some guy to supposedly go to Moscow and get it, right?
Right. That's right.
So now they're colluding with the Russians by their language.
Right.
And people say, hey, wait a minute. You paid for this stuff to come from the Russians. You know what they say?
Right.
Don't worry about where it came from.
Right. Look
Let's
at this
only sub- focus on the content.
Right, exactly.
Well, wait a minute. When it comes to WikiLeaks, we should ignore the content and focus on where it came from.
That's exactly
when it comes
right.
to the Steele dossier, we should ignore where it came from and focus on the content. Their arguments are ad hoc. Whatever argument they need at the time to work for them, that's the one
they're
going to use.
Yep, I know. Yeah, and they're contradictory. Both of them are out in the public sphere at the same time. I mean, they're practically side by side in the media, and yet the people reporting it don't even draw, you know, any kind of a tie between the two things. And it's naked in front of them.
Well, the other thing you got to keep in mind is what happened to the WikiLeaks. WikiLeaks showed us that people in the media were writing stories and sending them to the to the Clinton people before they even published them.
Right, that's right.
Letting
them tweak it.
The media was complicit, so the media has to play down the WikiLeaks.
Yeah.
They have to attack Assange. They have to go along with the Russian thing, with the Russian bullcrap. Why? Because they're complicit. They're not defending the Clintons. They're defending themselves. It's all one. You know what's interesting? So at first we found out that the Clintons, and we found out that the Clinton campaign and the DNC was all one, no delineation. But if you look at WikiLeaks, what you realize is if you go from the Clinton campaign to the DNC to the mainstream media, there was no delineation. Those were the same people.
Right. And actually, something that's even more scary to me, and that, you know, we had a full reading of the law of this back in the 1970s, when you have the DNC paying for people to go collude with some Russians and come up with a report that is then handed to the FBI, who then talks about and actually does help fund further development of this, and then use it as a basis for FISA warrants to spy on the other party through a White House, who sits on top of this, that's endorsing the candidate that generated it in the first place. A White House, by the way, that was publicly and privately assuring European governments, among others, and who knows who else, that there was no way that Trump was going to be elected president. As an aggregation, that's a pretty scary construct.
It really is. And so now the fact of the matter, you know, you and I, I'm sure neither one are no fan of Trump. But what we are a fan of is democracy.
Right.
What we are a fan of is a fair democratic government. And it's fairly obvious we have no parts of that right now. Right now, if you ask me, it seems to me that we have a deep state that's still controlled by the Clinton people. No, let me change this. Because when we say Hillary Clinton, yeah. Hillary Clinton is an avatar for something else.
That's right.
She's
right.
an
That's
avatar right. for the gold for right. the Goldman Sachs people. She's an avatar for the military industrial
she's,
and Wall Street
She's
people.
Personnel. She's furniture for the same operation that the rest of it is. This whole deep state thing. She's like an adjunct to it or an employee or whatever. Not it ain't her deep state. It's Clinton.
Right. People are like, well, they paid her for those speeches, or they're giving her money to do things. That's not the way it works. They weren't giving Hillary Clinton money to do things in any more than the New England Patriots are giving Tom Brady money every time he throws a pass.
Right.
They're paying him because he's on their team.
Right.
They're paying him because he's wearing their uniform, because he's trying to win the game for them.
Right.
So when they gave her money, it wasn't for a speech or for this or that. When they paid her, it was because she was their quarterback.
Right.
They
right.
handed her the ball and said, throw it, and she was throwing it.
Right. That's exactly right.
And so, you know, people are mistaken when they think Hillary Clinton is the be-all and end-all of these people. They're looking at some Kamala Harris's. They're looking at Cory Booker's. They're looking around saying, okay, Hillary Clinton didn't work. But you know what? I'm sure we can find somebody that'll get the job done.
Yeah, for sure.
And in D.C., so my office is on K Street. Let me tell you, dude, up and down K Street, what you've got is you've got, and here's the other thing that people don't know. You've got these think tanks, right? The Atlantic Council. Go to the Atlantic Council webpage, .org.com, whatever it is, and click on their funders. The Atlantic Council is funded by Lockheed Martin, by Chevron, by Pfizer, by Northrop Grumman. Listen to this. The Atlantic Council is funded by the United States Army, Air Force, Marines, Navy, U.S. State Department, the United Arab Emirates. I mean, on and on and on, right? So the most powerful military, by NATO, this is the Atlantic Council. You go to the Washington Post, and every time you turn around, they're saying the Atlantic Council research fund found out this. They don't tell you who the Atlantic Council is. I walk another block down the street and there's the New America Foundation. You know who they're funded by? Eric and Wendy Schmidt. They have the Eric and Wendy Schmidt senior fellowships. You know who Eric and Wendy Schmidt? They own Google.
Right.
You go from one of these, what people don't do, and I'll advise anybody listening to do, when you start reading these stories, you'll find that, well, the blah, 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 and this came from the such and such foundation, right. the such and such fund, there's one called ICIJ. When you see these organizations, think tanks, etc., click on them. Go look at them. Go look at their sponsors. Go look at who's on the boards of directors. Yeah. And you'll find they're all the same people.
Yeah, I mean, take a look at the Atlantic Council alone. You've got Henry Kissinger, Victoria Nuland, Philip Breedlove, David Petraeus, Pickering, a whole lot of these people, they're on
here's
the board of directors.
Here's a name that a lot of people don't know that's on the Atlantic Council, on the a senior fellow of the Atlantic Council. Dmitry Alperov. You know who Dmitry Alperov is? He's the guy that owns CrowdStrike. The only organization who's ever looked at the DNC computers, Dmitry Alperov owns that organization,
right.
and he's on the board of directors. Or either that or he's a senior fellow, whatever. He's one of the people that runs the Atlantic Council. Mm-hmm. It's a joke.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, you have this incestuous set of, you know, relationships in Washington that people have been talking about for many years. This is the so-called swamp that Trump was talking about. How do you think he's doing in the battle against the swamp so far?
No, it's a joke. Well, you know, here's and see what happened with Trump. He comes in. Trump thought the president's the guy in charge because he's used to being a CEO. Well, God knows, you and I, I'm sure, agree with virtually no policies of Donald Trump. But Donald Trump came in there. What's the first thing that happens? Everything that he said, every word out of his mouth was leaked into the newspaper. And they ended up getting what? General Kelly. They ended up surrounding him by generals, deep state operatives. You know what I mean? The General Kelly, General this guy, General that guy. See, what everybody hears is CIA, they hear NSA, they hear FBI, right? But what they don't realize is there is a gigantic monster of a very, very powerful deep state entity called military intelligence.
Right.
And people never, see, that's the one that doesn't exist, military intelligence, and it's powerful.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
It is powerful. And the president can say, I'm going to do this. And the military intelligence will say, oh, let's go bomb something that will block it. Let's go do something that makes that not feasible.
Right. And we saw some of that, I think, in Syria and, a couple of hits that were taken, basically, that thwarted Trump. And the whole, not for nothing, again, the whole Russiagate thing has thwarted one of the policies he promised to bring. How could he possibly try to make a better relationship with Russia in the present climate here?
They ain't going to let it happen. People need to understand of Ukraine. There is a great movie I would advise everybody to see. It's called Ukraine on Fire. If you want to understand Ukraine, watch it. I'm pretty sure it's on Netflix. And in fact, I know for a fact that you can go to YouTube and watch it. It's called Ukraine on Fire. It is when Paul Manafort got caught up, got in trouble for what happened in Ukraine, and they found out that Tony Podesta, the brother of Hillary Clinton's campaign manager, got in trouble for the company that he started with Hillary Clinton's campaign manager for shady dealings in Ukraine. I immediately knew that was coming, because Ukraine is the most corrupt, one of the most corrupt countries in the world.
Yep, it's true. All right, Garland, thank you very much. A pleasure as always. And tell us about places we can find your work.
I'm at Garland Nixon. That's at Garland Nixon on Twitter, garland.nixon on Instagram, and just plain old Garland, G-A-R-L-A-N-D, Garland Nixon on Facebook. And pretty much everything I do, I put up there.
Great. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Always a pleasure.
Same. Thanks. Bye. And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.
And welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Rigged politics, that's what many are saying after the DNC's acting chair, Donna Brazile, claimed Bernie Sanders was cheated in the primary. But the rigging goes further. The GOP establishment didn't embrace Trump then nor now. Are both parties at war with themselves? Crosstalking Parties in Crisis, I'm joined by my guest, Tim Black, in Washington. He's a political analyst, commentator, and host of The Tim Black Show. In New York, we have Steve Maltzberg. He is a conservative political commentator. And in Cairo, we cross to Joe Loria. He is an independent journalist, former Wall Street Journal correspondent, and author of How I Lost by Hillary Clinton, with the foreword by Julian Assange. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, Joe, let me go to you first. You're the Huffington Post refugee. As we speak right now, tell us quickly what happened, because it has kind of a tangent to what we're talking about today. Rigging. We're going to talk about rigging the election, but the media is rigged, too. Joe, tell our viewers what happened.
Yes, I wrote a piece for Consortium News about a week ago in which I showed that the two sources for the Russiagate story were both paid for by the Democratic National Committee and the Clinton campaign in the case of the Steele memos. So that the source of the information that we have, that it actually was the basis for the most part of the January 6th intelligence estimate by three agencies, was actually opposition research, and paid for by the Democrats, and also the computers was searched by a company that they paid for, not by the FBI.
CrowdStrike.
And the article goes on to show the consequences of this being new McCarthyism, and also the tensions and geopolitical situation between Russia and the United States that are part of this Russiagate story, unfortunately. I did then few days ago, I posted the same article with some updates with the Manafort and Papadopoulos indictments onto the Huffington Post. As a contributor there, I post directly to the website. 23 hours later, it was taken down. I was never told why. I've never heard a word from the Huffington Post. I wrote to them and asked them, please, to tell me what the reasons are. And in the absence of any response from them, I could only conclude that this was not an editorial, but a political decision to remove that article, basically.
Yep.
A word that I rarely use and don't like to use, because it's been overused and misused, is censorship. But I can't think of any other word to describe what happened.
Well, that's what happens in liberal media right now when you have a different opinion here. You know, Steve, maybe it's a little bit of a stretch, but I think I know how Bernie Sanders feels when it comes to the DNC during the election. You know, I called, I wrote emails, I got no response, you know. This whole Donna Brazile thing, you know, she comes back, you know, amazingly so. And really, she's acquitted herself so very badly in the media, her presentation, I think most would agree. But let's not worry about presentation, let's worry about substance. She's come out and made these claims. I mean, they seem to be credible. Some of it is documented. And then she goes out and backtracks. Quite a humiliating public performance, I would say. Steve, go ahead.
Well, I mean, I can't figure that part out, to be honest with you.
Well,
there's got to be, though, a method to this madness.
Books. That's what it is.
Well, to sell books. Okay. Yeah, but she has thrown the party and the Clintons under the bus. I mean, what is revealed in this book, and nobody is denying any of this. And Bernie Sanders, you bring up Bernie Sanders. I'd like to hear Bernie Sanders, as our guests here mentioned, censorship. Call it something. Bernie Sanders is like, let's move on. That bothers the heck out of me. I really got to tell you. But what happened is that the Clintons controlled the whole process. It was dishonest. We knew it was dishonest because of the WikiLeaks dump, and then Debbie Wasserman Schultz had to step down, and Donna Brazile's now saying, when I took over, boy, did I find a mess. But here's what Debbie Wasserman Schultz did, here's what the Clinton people did, here's what Hillary herself did, I mean, here's what Obama did. She has torn the party apart, and because we don't have an honest media, it's not a big story, when this is a huge story.
Yeah, you know, Tim, it's like Stockholm Syndrome. They can't let go. They simply can't let go. And, you know, sometimes that doesn't really bother me because they really took a fall in last year in the election. I mean, when your enemies are in a circular firing squad, don't get in the way. The thing is that I hope the media is taken out in the process, the liberal media, as this swamp is being exposed for what it is, and the shamelessness of the mainstream media not to call what it sees and what we all see is self-evident. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you, Peter. What we're witnessing right now is Donna Brazile. She's making these allegations, and I believe all of them. Like in the progressive community, we were already on this page 6 months ago, nine months ago, a year ago. This is not new revelations. The problem is, like you said, it's the media. It's the corporate-owned media who do not want to get these facts out. It's our job to continue to pound them and make sure that people know that, yes, this really did happen. The DNC was co-opted by Hillary Clinton. It's a fact. The joint fundraising agreement, the separate memorandum that was signed by the Clinton organization, that gave them logistical control, staffing control, control of the purse strings. Come on, Peter.
Tim,
if you own the money, if you control the money,
Tim, so I want to ask something, because maybe a lot of people in Washington would like to know the answer to the following question. 6 months ago, you were a nutcase. You were a conspiracy theorist for saying all these things. How did you transform yourself into a normal person on this program? I want to know your secret, please.
But my brother, I don't know. Look, you're absolutely right, though. I was called a Russian bot. I was called a member of the GOP. I've never voted Republican, Peter. I don't know what they think in here.
Tim.
But yes,
Tim,
absolutely, man.
The fact is, they're not thinking. That's the problem here. Let me go back to Joe in Cairo. I mean, not being able to let go of this narrative. Why is it? Is because they have nothing else, or You know, if we look at Donna Brazile, they're afraid that the floodgates will break open. Okay, uranium won, the Comey thing, you know, Mueller before in his previous incarnation. It's all out there. There's a conspiracy, a real conspiracy, and the whole thrust of the media is completely upside down. If there had been collusion or conspiracy between the Trump people and Russia, we would have heard about it a long time ago. It would have been leaked, okay? So, Joe, they don't have an alternative, or if they start give an inch, it's going to completely fall apart right in front of them, and it will continue their humiliation almost 1 year on. Go ahead, Joe.
I think the Democratic Party establishment elite feel that their class interests are under assault.
Yep.
They saw what the Bernie Sanders campaign did. They see that they need to blame someone else. They could never look at themselves and understand that their embrace of the neoliberal policies from the Bill Clinton days has led to this backlash in American society amongst workers. They're getting fed up. They want a new progressive era, the way it happened in the late, at the end of the 19th century, when the major trusts took control of the political process with all of the money that they poured into it. And then we had a whole raft of laws that tried to curb this influence from corporations into politics,
right,
and including that companies couldn't pay out of their own coffers anymore. And that was all overthrown with Citizen United, and with the deregulation of Clinton and Bush and Reagan, we have now new trust base, essentially. So a new progressive era is on. Perhaps the seeds are there, and I think that the Democratic elite, which is tied with this big money, is very worried about that. Now, as far as the rank and file Democrats, they have a kind of quasi-religious faith in their party, in their leaders, and in the blame that's being assessed completely on Russia for having devastated their chances in the last election. And when you're dealing with someone who's a zealot in terms of their religious belief, that they will not be open to any kind of reason or any facts that would force them to think. I think that's why the Huffington Post story was taken down.
Yep.
They don't want to be forced to think about what they believe in an almost religious way.
Yeah, because Barack Obama, he was their great saint, okay? And Hillary Clinton was their God, and God failed them. Go ahead, Jim, you wanted to jump in.
Yeah, I wanted to say they call it a cult. Donna Brazile said this in an interview. There was a cult-like situation. Morning Joe got her to admit that. And what's a cult? That's a worshiping. That is an intense admiration. I remember Jim Jones making people drink the Kool-Aid. Well, a lot of Democrats have drank the Kool-Aid when it comes to Hillary Clinton. And it's time to turn the page on it, Joe, Peter. It's time to let it go.
I don't know. Go ahead, Steve, because I was just going to say, the Democrats have gotten so used to being.
Go ahead.
Jump in, Steve. Go ahead.
No. She also claimed that she was treated poorly because she was black. She felt like a slave. She was treated poorly because she was a woman by Clinton and her people, the Clinton people. I mean, this is huge news, again, which will never be talked about. Look, this is no surprise. The media, first of all, they're politically aligned with the Clinton philosophy. They love the Clintons. The Clintons could do no wrong. Uranium gate, the connection to the dossier, all this is being ignored by the media.
Right.
And when you look at the WikiLeaks dump, you saw mainstream reporters in the liberal media writing to John Podesta, is this okay?
Don't
tell anybody. I'm a hack. Oh, I'm back from Republican hell. I was with them for a week. I mean, this should be no surprise to us.
It should be no surprise. You know, it's very interesting with Donna Brazile, pulling the sexism card. I guess now, as a result, all four of us consider ourselves good feminists, because I find that kind of behavior abhorrent here. I'm serious here. Tim, right before we go to the break here, what is Donna Brazile's future? Is she going to be able to reincarnate, come back again for the third coming? 20 seconds before we go to the break.
I think she will be coming back. I think this is what this is all about. She did not like getting pushed out of the party, even though she had this little ethics board position. She's letting them know, hey, I've got something to say, I'm going to say it. And she's returning back to the Democratic Party. That's why she's doing this, I think, to be muscle.
As I said earlier, I don't think it's necessarily it's a bad idea for the country, but for the Democratic Party, if they continue down the same course, I think they're going to get the same results in the next midterm elections. Okay, gentlemen, we're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on parties in crisis. Stay with RT.
You're listening to Weekday World from CPR.
Okay, Joe, I want to shift gears a little bit here. I don't want to just keep pounding on the Democratic Party, which I really enjoy doing, by the way. But let's talk about the Republicans here. They have a very kind of different kind of problem, though I think it's very serious here. We have a base that came out for Donald Trump. Districts and counties that were long blue came out red. And there's the basis for a movement there. But I see the establishment. Again, I have just as much distaste and abhorrence for the Republican establishment as I do for the Democratic establishment, because they're in cahoots, okay? They just want to maintain power here. This is the real dilemma for the Republicans, because I don't see that they're making much progress on adding to what they achieved last year. I think they're falling into a deep freeze. What do you think? Go ahead, Joe.
I think both parties are in a very deep crisis, and I'm enjoying every minute of it. I want to see them destroy each other with the scandals that are engulfing them. I'm completely nonpartisan because I can't stand either party. And as a reporter, I just follow the facts, and that's why I wrote that piece about Russiagate. The Huffington Post took down. They couldn't accept that. I'm not a Trump supporter by any means. But I don't see a bright future for either party. The problem is what's going to replace it if it does break down. Getting big money out of American politics is the key. But it goes back to 1758, Peter, when George Washington ran in the Virginia House and he spent 90% of his campaign money to buy 160 gallons of booze to give out to voters. And then we saw Andrew Jackson with his patronage, and then the big trusts, oil, steel, and railroads took over the party. Then it took over politics in the late 19th century and gave us William McKinley, who spent $4 million of corporate money to bring us the overseas American empire, the beginnings of it. So there's a real, and it's dangerous in some ways, and it's going to be chaotic, but I think it has to happen, and it is happening, that both parties are losing legitimacy. Trump is doing a great job losing legitimacy for the Republican Party. And now all of this internal fighting within the Democrats with Brazil and Clinton and whatnot, and the fact that we now know that the Clinton campaign and the DNC paid for the essence of what is the Russiagate story, as opposition research, that their credibility is eroding by the day. And we could only welcome this. Of course, we don't know what it's going to replace. There is no party that represents American interests.
If you watch CNN and MSNBC, you wouldn't get that, okay? It takes critical eyes that people that are not just going into that kind of zombie TV. Okay, Steve, I'm going to give you a hypothetical, Steve. What if it had been better, maybe, if the Clinton people had broken their bad habit of lying and cheating and stealing that they've been doing for decades? Let's say that had been put in check last year. Wouldn't it have been better that Bernie did get the nomination and then Trump? I mean, there is the most stark difference that I think we could have had in our lifetime as different agendas. And I would have welcomed that. And I would have welcomed an honest election, not a rigged election. I agree that the GOP primary wasn't rigged, but the establishment certainly did everything it could to hurt their most popular candidate. And that is a form of rigging. So my hypothetical, how would you answer that?
I think it would have been a much more competitive race. I think that Bernie would have been a better candidate because Hillary, by all accounts, Democrat and Republican accounts, she was an awful candidate. And she thought that she was entitled, and she thought she had it coming, and she didn't listen to the advice of those around her. And so I think Bernie would have made it more competitive. I do have to disagree that Donald Trump is ruining the Republican Party. I'll tell you that. Donald Trump has reinvigorated the Republican Party. I mean, look what he did last year, a little over a year ago now. What's going on now, which was also alluded to correctly, is that it's the Republican establishment. It's the McConnells, it's the Ryans, it's those people, it's McCain. Yeah. They can't stand Trump. They don't want him to succeed. Donald Trump is doing everything correctly. He's doing what he promised he would do when he ran, and I think that accusing Donald Trump of being a party to this, problem within the Republican Party is not accurate.
Okay, well, Joe, Steve, do you want to read?
Did you just say that Donald Trump is doing it?
Hold on, Tim, go. Tim in Washington. No, let's go to Tim in Washington. Yeah, go ahead, Tim.
I can't believe Steve just said that Donald Trump is doing everything correctly. He hasn't really gotten anything done other than executive orders. What is he doing correctly now? Look, I'm not a Democrat or Republican, but to make that statement, oh my God. What did he get done? What did he pass? What legislation? He's not getting a lot of stuff done. He's been effective because he's the president.
Steve?
He's gotten a lot of stuff done. There has been legislation passed, but what hasn't passed is not Trump's fault. It's the establishment Republican fault.
Yep.
It's the leadership's fault. They're stymieing him. He's not doing it. He's doing what he's supposed to be doing.
Okay, Joe, weigh in. Go ahead. Hang on. Let's go to Cairo.
Yes, I'm glad
they're
stymieing him.
Go ahead, Joe.
Yes, I mean, Trump did not do what he's promised. He cynically manipulated the desperation of a lot of American working people, throwing in a lot of racist comments, too, to bring them along. And he's not delivered on any of that. His legislation has failed because the American people don't want it. And that's been made clear in town halls. His awful health insurance plan, this ridiculous tax plan. And to say that it's not his fault that he's hurting the Republican Party, look at the results of the recent election. In the U.S., many seats were lost to Democrats.
Okay.
In the last couple of days.
Two blue states stayed blue.
Okay,
parties are in crisis.
Both parties are in crisis. I think they are in crisis. Gentlemen, let's think of 2016. I think all of us would agree on the following, that it was a change election. A lot of people are very, very sick and tired of the establishment parties. What we saw to a great degree was a protest vote. Now, the problem is, how do the parties react to that? And I think both parties are not. The establishments of both parties are not, okay? I think there are figures in the Democratic Party that are more progressive. Look, I'm a conservative guy, really conservative. I have a really good relationship with a lot of progressives. I find a lot of common ground with progressives on issues as well. It's this establishment Republicans and the establishment Democrats. I'm barely on speaking terms with them, okay? Because their signature is failure, 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 okay? It's time to shake up the discourse and change narratives. Tim, you're a progressive, I think. I think we could agree, right?
You're absolutely right. Yes, you can agree. And it's nice to meet you, my friend. Look, Peter, I look at it like this. Big money interest is the problem. It's not anything other than that. In 2016, Wall Street owned the elections. $555 million spent by Wall Street. So then we got bank deregulation. This is what goes on in America. That's the real problem. But going back to Donald Trump and back to the Democrats, look, we just saw what the Democrats are capable of doing. You got to give them props on what, almost 15 DSAs, Democratic Socialists, were elected. That's the Bernie Sanders model. Of course Bernie Sanders could have won this thing if he was given an opportunity. That's why a lot of us are so bitter with the Democratic Party. We had a shot with Bernie, and we see that Bernie's message of populism is resonating across the country.
Steve, jump in and weigh in. How do you react
to
that?
Then why doesn't Bernie speak out?
Good point.
I'm sorry, Peter?
I think you have a very good point.
I saw Bernie the other night.
He does have a good point.
I saw Bernie the other night, and all he said was, we have to move on. Where is he? Where is this great socialist sticking up for his principles and saying this was we were robbed? How dare they bring justice? Nothing. He couldn't care less.
Joe, let me go to Joe.
You know what?
Hang on, let me go to Joe here, because I'm going to say kind of maybe a harsh thing here, but where is the integrity in politics now? You know, when we were growing up, you remember how people made fun of Gerald Ford as the bum, he was a bungler and all that. I heard his speeches on NPR. God forbid I ever listen to that station again. This was like 10 years ago. He sounded like an intellectual compared to what people say today. I don't see high caliber people. Donald Trump is in a category all his own. I've already said in this program, in 20 years time, there will be a graduate course called Donald Trump Studies, okay? Because it is that vast and complex and deep, okay? But Joe, answer my question about this caliber of politicians, because I don't see it's there.
Well, I think there's certainly the discourse was a lot better years ago, but I think that integrity in politics has always been in short supply, not only in the United States, but around the world. So you're asking a lot there for integrity. What we want, though, is for leaders running for office to recognize the needs of the electorate, where the actual majority of the people have a say, and that they're not lied to and manipulated, and that their interests are looked out for. I think that Sanders, at least his rhetoric was that he was going to do that, and that's why he was popular. So I think popularism or progressivism is the only another progressive era. We're in a new gilded age. It's even more unequal than the first gilded age. And I think there's going to be a new progressive era that has to come about, or the United States is in deep deep trouble. And that could only come about by the voices of the interests of the vast majority of Americans being again addressed on so many different levels.
Okay.
And the destruction of neoliberal policies starting from the 80s and 90s.
Steve, how does Trump deal with what Joe just said there? Because there is a progressive wind in the country. It hasn't been able to turn it into electoral successes here, particularly since they were the election was rigged in the Democratic Party. That is, for me, moving forward, it is Hillary Clinton's malfeasance and illegal activity, immoral activity, that is really gives a highlight. It flashes a light on the terrible moral status of American politics. She and she alone and her husband.
Well, look, here's what I think has to happen. I think that the focus of the investigation has to turn to the Clintons and everything you just mentioned, or another special prosecutor has to be appointed. You know, there's this school of thought out there that's gaining some steam that this is all a bait and switch, that Trump appointed Mueller and that the fix was in. They were going to make it seem like they were going after Trump in collusion, but they were really going to eventually get to the Clintons. I don't know how they're going to get to the Clintons, but they have to. If the Clintons are held accountable, if the Clintons are punished legally or otherwise,
yeah,
it will put a whole new light, yeah, on the political system. And it'll be a warning. It'll be a big, big warning. But to let it go on as just, well, you know, it's only the Clintons. Here we go again. Leave them alone. And nothing happens. That will be a horrific thing for U.S. politics.
Steve, I think you end on the most logical and sensible note on this program. We've run out of time, gentlemen. Many thanks to my guests in Washington, New York, and in Cairo. And thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, Crosstalk Rules.
You're listening to Weekday World from CPR, Community Public Radio. I'm your host, Don DeBar.